Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Lot to share. No guest today. Instead, all about health and healing and the issues that are important to you. I will give a little more in-depth discussion today on the topic of cholesterol, a comment from Robert Haas on nutritional interventions for healthy lipids. That'll be good. Then I'm going to talk about the six kinds of pills that Big Pharma tries to get you hooked on for life from Martha Rosenberg Aldernet and why we're lining up to take these pills. Have a lot to share. I'll be going to our calls and any subject that you find important to you. Questions, thoughts, challenges, insights, share them with us on our TalkBack segment. And that's 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We'll go there in about 15 minutes. Let's begin. A young teenager, a woman from Singapore, moved up to Canada, took a hand at the National Science Award and won it this week. What did she do? She showed that cellulose, now that's the woody material found in trees that enables them to stand straight, also acts as a very potent antioxidant. Quote, from the Bioscience Education Canada, her super antioxidant compound could one day help improve health and anti-aging by neutralizing more of the harmful free radicals found in the body. Well, that's good. So, who knew that there were antioxidants in wood pulp, cellulose? Didn't know. Now we do. And she's on her way to a good background in science. Good for her. A new antioxidant shows promise for arthritis. This is from Michael Smith, MD. Now, I'm just finishing a major documentary on pain. It's a replacement from my earlier documentary from about 10 years ago. Because today we realize that almost everything we drink or eat, and even breathe, can, if it's polluted, cause us to have inflammation, and from the inflammation causes pain. So anything that can cause a prevention of that or deactivate the pain is good. So now we realize from this article from Michael Smith that staying active is one sure way to improve your quality of life, and for most of us, that will translate into a longer life. And by the way, there are at least 1,000 studies showing that the more aerobic exercise you do, the longer you live. In fact, just one that I'll probably be reporting on tomorrow or the next day shows that long-distance runners can add about 5 to 7 years onto their life expectancy. Now, that's just a normal long-distance runner because they have low body fat and they have better cardiovascular results. Now, imagine then if they compensated and also had all their antioxidants and their essential fatty acids. Then you could probably add 20 years onto that. So this scientist, this physician, came up with insights on a new antioxidant. And it's in the form of an ergothionine, and that relieves joint pain. And what is it? Well, it's a joint-specific antioxidant. And the science is there. It's growing. And it was started by Dr. Bruce Ames, who we've had on this program. He's a senior scientist at the Children's Hospital Oakland Institute. And he says, quote, ergothionine is a very weak antioxidant compared to other compounds in the cell, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's specific to the key in the target tissue, meaning it really targets specific tissue, whereas vitamin C helps the whole body and all the tissues. This doesn't. And this was done by scientists at the University of Cologne in Germany. So we can expect to see this, I would say, in the very near future. More on that coming up. Basil. Very good herb to eat with. Here's the latest. This is from a major scientific journal and the plant physiology and biochemistry. Here's what it says. Basil is a potent 1-2 punch for robust flavor and medicinal advantages. Now, I'm sure many people know that it's derived from the Greek word meaning royal, and it's a very versatile herb, and it has a lot of power. Most people just don't think of it. They just like the way it tastes. But it has lots of vitamin K and calcium. It also is high in antioxidant oils, and basil offers an array of really protective DNA elements. Now, you can get basil oil. It's a little more expensive, a little thicker, a little stronger, kind of a greenish tint, but it's really good for you. And I suggest that you have it. And it's also loaded with a particular type of anti-inflammatory compound called beta-caryophyllene, C-A-R-Y-O-P-H-Y-L-L-E-N-E. And that treats arthritis and inflammatory bowel disease. And it's very strong in basil, more so than any other herb, and it's been used for thousands of years. Now, it's indigenous to Asia and Africa, and it's grown all across the world, but primarily in France, Greece, Egypt, and the United States. There are over 60 varieties of the herb. I grow it in my garden. I grow very, you know, there's sweet basil, but I also like lemon basil and lime basil and cinnamon basil. But what it does, especially if you put a lot of it, and most people don't do that, put a lot of it in a blender and blend it with some pine nuts, but just gently roast the pine nut for about 10 minutes at a low temperature, like 110 degrees. In fact, you could put it in a dehydrator. Then put in some sesame seeds into that mix also. And you get a paste. And that paste, loaded with basil, I'm talking about like 2 or 3 cups of basil, with the pine nut and a little bit of extra virgin olive oil or coconut oil. Either one will work. And then you can put that, mix that into your pasta or brown rice. And it is powerful. Why? Because it's a DNA protector. That's what it does. It protects your DNA, the storage form of genetic information. Now, the DNA is packaged in functional units called chromosomes. Chromosomes can be damaged by what? Any form of radiation, anything that produces free radicals, like oxidative stress. And even exercising creates oxidative stress, and that's why you want to take your antioxidants after you work out so that you trap the free radicals from the exercise, but you benefit from it. So anyhow, if you don't protect your DNA, then there'll be genetic material inside your cell that will mutate, and that's linked to cancer. Now, there's two water-soluble flavonoids, orientin and vicin, V-I-C-E-N-I-N. Or bison, and it's present in basil, and that protects you against radiation, and especially at the cellular level. In fact, there was some research in radiation research on mice that received the basil, and it protected their bone marrow cells. It's also antibacterial. So if you find that you want to have just one little extra piece of protection, there's lots of studies showing that it slows down or stops the growth of pathogenic bacteria. And that's because of its essential oils. That's why I don't get the dried basil. I get the fresh basil, and I get the basil oil. Because there is what is called eugenol or rosmarinic acid and linalool. These are all oils and acids that are in basil. So you want to get that. It's been able to retard the growth of a very serious killer called Staphylococcus aureus and Bacillus cereus and E. coli. Also, rosmarinic acid or myrinic acid is effective in stopping the Pseudomonas, a bacteria associated with lung infections. So you don't want all these bacteria in your body, so this acts like a natural antibiotic, and it's really good for you. It also helps your heart. It helps the immune system. It helps with diabetes management. Helps with arthritis. So you'd be hard put to find a culinary herb that is going to do as much good for you as basil. And yet people might occasionally, when they have a pasta, you know, they'll take one or two leaves. That's not going to do you anything. I'm talking about really taking a lot of basil, putting it into a blender, mix it into a dish, and then you're getting some really good benefit from it. Chewing gum. We never talk about chewing gum. I remember my father, my mother smoked, my brother smoked, everyone smoked where I grew up. And what they did, they would take the chewing gum and eat it all day long. And of course they all had tooth problems because of the stupid sugars in the chewing gum. It would kill, I guess, or neutralize the smell of the cigarettes because they also drank coffee. Boy, the combination of coffee and cigarettes on a person's breath, really bad. I remember that as a kid. Good news to know. Don't chew chewing gum. Why? Because the latest study on this topic from Cardiff University School of Psychology shows that chewing gum harms short-term memory, contrary to previous studies suggested gum could improve recall. Cardiff University is in the United Kingdom, and they've claimed that chewing gum negatively impacts short-term memory in the same way as a peripheral speech impairment. The study called Gummed Up Memory, Chewing Gum Impairs Short-Term Recall, it was published in the Journal of Experimental Psychology, says, quote, "We show for the first time that fundamental aspects of STM recall of both order and item identity are in fact impaired by chewing gum." Quote, "It is striking that none of the studies that have examined the effects of chewing gum on STM have employed the classic test of STM capacity, that is the reproduction of a short sequence of items." And they did this on a series of students. That's what they found. Now, the question is why? How does it do this? And they have not yet figured that out. But they're claiming it does. And finally, first study investigating possible link between sunscreen ingredient and endometriosis. This is from the American Chemical Society, and here's what it says. I'll quote it directly. It says, "Scientists are reporting a possible link between the use of sunscreen containing a certain ingredient that mimics the effects of the female sex hormone estrogen and an increased risk of being diagnosed with endometriosis," which, by the way, is a very painful condition, which the uterine tissue grows outside the uterus. And this was published in Environmental Science and Technology. So my suggestion, don't use any of the synthetic sunscreens. Use those where you have a complete description of the product. The ingredient in question is called BP, 2,4-OHBP. So that's what you don't want. You don't want that BP in there. Also, hot sauce ingredient reduces beer belly fat as a weight loss surgery alternative. This is from Brigham Women's University at Harvard. It says, quote, "According to the Department of Surgery and a research team there, they found that capsaicin, the component in chili peppers, giving it the burning sensation, helped achieve weight loss and reduce the risk of obesity-related diseases with fewer side effects when compared to today's bariatric surgical options." This was published in Digestive Disease in Sciences. So, the more of the hot spices, the better your metabolism. By the way, there's also a big kill-off of E. pylori, Helicobacter, that causes ulcers. There's also big kill-off of a lot of bacteria in the throat and in the intestine. So it's actually good for you. And one other thing that's good for you, coca products. Quote, this is in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. "Coca products show consistent blood pressure benefits." And this is not a big amount. This is 25 milligrams. It was able to lower systolic and diastolic blood pressure. So organic coca, I would say 2 ounces a day would be terrific. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. What's the latest on cholesterol? Well, all the money's on statins, but the science is not there to back it up, and statins can be extremely dangerous. I prefer a more natural approach. But first of all, let's just put in proper perspective that an average cholesterol level is not the same as a healthy one. I believe that for blood lipids, that we should look at 130 to 170 milligrams per deciliter. For the LDL cholesterol, I believe 45 to 95. For the HDL, 50 to 60. Triglycerides, under 75. Now, statin drugs are claimed to lower your LDL and total cholesterol, but only have a tiny benefit for the raising the HDL, and they don't affect the triglycerides. So I'm against the statin drugs. Instead, I believe we should look for natural approaches, and there are plenty of those natural approaches. But possibly the best of them all is the red yeast rice. In my opinion, head and shoulders above anything else out there in the statin drugs. Now, red yeast rice is very common throughout all of Chinese medicine. And also, you can get this just almost in anyone's restaurant or home in Asia. What it is, it's made of fermenting polished rice with different strains of yeast and a specific type called Monacus purpureus. And that, in turn, contains the naturally occurring statin, monoclonin K. Now, the monoclonin K effectively lowers cholesterol by activating a HMG reductase inhibitor, the same mode of action as synthetic statin drugs. But this is in its natural form. And so I'm suggesting that this is the proper way of going about it. So what is it that we could reasonably expect? Well, first off, don't buy into the lies that cholesterol-lowering statin drugs are the best choice. They are not. And also, they can't prove that they protect your heart. There's no long-term studies to establish that. They're also not considered provable safe, and they're certainly not low cost. Yet, red yeast rice contains the monocholin K, which works by the same mechanisms as statin drugs to lower cholesterol. And it's been proven in study after study that red yeast rice can lower your LDL, total cholesterol, and triglycerides, and can raise your HDL. It also has been beneficial for people who could not tolerate the side effects of statin drugs. And it works similar to statin drugs. You would also have to take extra coenzyme Q10. I'm suggesting maybe 300, 500 milligrams. So those are just some of the things I believe that we should consider. Now, also, you should consider polycosinol, 10 milligrams, niacin, but not to flushing. Those are also very important, as well as beta-sitosterol. So natural ways of helping. And by the way, polycosinol is just one of these superstar natural components of beeswax and whole sugar cane. There's about 100 studies that have been done on polycosinol. Poly, P-O-L-I, coso, C-O-S-N-O-L. It is obtained from the Cuban sugar cane at anywhere from 5 to 40 milligrams, and it will lower your cholesterol, and it's equivalent to statin drugs. So that's one of the reasons I would recommend it. All right? That's the latest on that. Now let's go over and we're going to take your calls now. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And then I'll talk with Luann Panessi in a moment about your calls and emails. I'm on the road, so please don't email me. And don't leave any phone messages. A, my phone messages are filled. And B, I cannot read any messages. I don't have my computer with me. So from the day I left till now, and until I get back, I won't know that you will have emailed me. Hence, you may think, gee whiz, why didn't Gary return the email? But my IT person told me there's like 36,000 people waiting with emails. How many of those are the same person, I don't know. But anyway, please don't email me. I got a lot of work to do when I come back. I'm going to go over the six kinds of pills Big Pharma tries to get you hooked on for life in a few moments. But let's go over now and say hello to Luann Panessi. She's a holistic nurse, and she gave up a very distinguished career in orthodox nursing, nurse administrator at Long Island Jewish Hospital, an oncological nurse, an emergency room nurse, and critical care nurse combined for over 35 years. And she left all that in 1993, where she made her transition into holistic and complementary medicine. That's where she is today. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Yeah, it was worth it. It took a lot of courage to do what I did, but when you have new information and you have a better understanding of who you are and how you fit into the world, you stop doing things to adapt to other people's expectations of you. And I couldn't do what I was doing anymore and still be happy and fulfilled. So I have an email here from Robert from Santa Fe. And he emails me today, and he says, you were right. He said, Santa Fe is overbuilt. There's a whole bunch of superficial baby boomers here. And most of the spiritually inclined people have moved to Albuquerque. And he says that his wife was part of the Santa Fe community. And what's interesting is that she said to him that people really don't see themselves as the problem. So essentially, he says that he's given up on trying to influence people there, and he is looking now at starting his own homestead in the near future. And he wants to thank you for your insights and your guidance and your information.
All right. He's not really asking a question, but I believe it deserves a response. And I'll offer a philosophical response. You're familiar with George Bernard Shaw, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
He said the worst sin towards our fellow creatures is not to hate them, but to be indifferent to them. That's the essence of inhumanity. But we also remember the great French essayist and philosopher Albert Camus, who said, we rarely confide in those who are better than we are. Now, put those two thoughts together, and that's what I just did in my mind for this particular thought. Because I'll tell you a very specific story. I used to go out to Santa Fe regularly. Maybe once every 5 months, 6 months. In the early 1970s, when I had a whole string of best-selling books back to back to back to back. I had like 9 best-selling books. And these were major bestsellers because they were crossover bestsellers, because I was a regular on Merv Griffin and Johnny Carson and Mike Douglas and all the major shows. Because, quite simply, there were no young nutritionists in America. I just happened to have been very fortunate coming in early with a monster bestseller at the end of a whole generation where Carlton Fredericks, Adele Davis, Gaylord Houser, Pablo Arola, we're all in their 60s and 70s. Here I am in my young 20s. In any case, it gave me a chance to travel, and it gave me a chance to spend time. And I always like to go to a place not to rush in, do a show and rush out, but rather spend a day and just find out who the people are, how they live, what they're like. I always like that. And I do the same thing whenever I travel around the world. Well, anyhow, in Santa Fe, I really enjoyed it, because it had a very large artist community there. And we would spend a long time each day sitting around talking about the world. Very same issues as today, by the way, about the corruption on Wall Street, the corruption in politics, the lobbyists, how easy it was to buy influence. The difference is today we know about ALEC and we know about the lobbyists, and politics has become so raw that everyone realizes how corruptible most politicians are, but not back then. And there was a big movement. Peter Max was a major artist at the time. And this cost of living in Santa Fe was very inexpensive. And I was actually thinking about maybe getting a place out there because there was an afternoon where one of the people said, hey, let's go out and, you know, we'll do a whole dinner. And we did. And it was just beautiful ranch. I mean, real Old West type of ranch. Kit Carson type of ranch. I think he was from Santa Fe. In any case, you go 5 minutes out of Santa Fe and you're out into the desert. And this is like the High Plains Desert because it's 7,000 feet up there. That's higher than Denver. I would later go out there to train for my world championships and top national races because when you train at 7,000 feet and you're running, you really have a burn in your lungs, but it's good for you. It helps your muscles because it trains the body to utilize oxygen differently, and that's why a lot of athletes train in Denver and also trained in Mexico City because it's also up around 5,000 feet. But I was just struck when I went off and went for walks and to look out over the desert and get those beautiful rock formations. So anyhow, jump ahead. I even remember biking from Denver to Boulder because I was told, you got to go meet this guy, Gary. He's right up your alley. You know, you really like him. There are a lot of guys over in Boulder, very hip place. And I went over and met this guy. And, you know, and he said, I'm going out, and I went out with him, and we picked herbs where he brought them back, and he showed me how he blended them all, hand-blended them. And that was the founder of Celestial Seasonings. In fact, probably three or four classic companies that would go on to become very successful were all located right there in that little tiny town of Boulder. It was a tiny town. Had a great, I think it was called Sunflower, great health food store, restaurant. And no traffic in this part of town you could walk. And I remember looking up on a bulletin board and I saw about 150 different lectures and demonstrations of different types involving healing and social consciousness. And I thought, that's more than New York City and Los Angeles combined in a week. And this was just for 1 week. Those two cities don't have this much. It was just that hip. And that's when I began to recommend people that, you know, Boulder and Santa Fe, really together places. And then you went a little further out of Santa Fe and you hit Taos, which was the artist mecca community in America. Now let's jump ahead 5 years ago. And I had to stop on a book tour, and I did in Santa Fe. And you walk around the streets and you see very trendy restaurants and very modern cars. But coming in, I saw that all the houses, and you get about a 2-3 mile drive down this long road coming up from Albuquerque, which is about an hour south of Santa Fe. There's no airport in Santa Fe. There, you have to fly into Albuquerque and drive. But all the houses look the same. They look like little mud balls, little adobe, just totally lacking in originality. And all the people were very trendy. And I remember getting a massage, and because I'd just coming from Hawaii. And I went from New York, Hawaii, did the national championship, back to New York, and directly the same day out. So it was like 28 hours of flying. I needed a massage. And I remember the woman, you know, saying, oh, I came to your lecture, you know, like 30 years ago. And I said, how you doing? She said, well, you know, doing great, but the town has changed. And I said, well, I'm only here, unfortunately, to do this lecture, and then I'm on a tour. She says, you know, those of us who do massage and body work and aromatherapy and midwifery and meditation, all of us live in Albuquerque. We can't afford to live in Santa Fe anymore. It's too expensive. When you were here, probably a house went for $75,000, if that. Now it's $700,000 on the low end and goes up from there. And she told me about a place that I had gotten a massage way back then. I think it was called 10,000 Waves. It was a very hip place. And she says, now look at the price. She said, whenever the wealthy people come in, they come in to speculate. They got to buy the house. They live in California. They live in New York. They live in Chicago. And they don't understand what consequences that does to the people who actually live here. And she said, it's an interesting phenomena that no longer is there that strong spiritual base in Santa Fe or a Boulder. And I'd been in, I went from Denver to Boulder. That was the trip. But it's all gone. It's all just genderfied. That takes into the idea of what George Bernard Shaw said. When we're indifferent to people, when people are just there to service. Now bring that into something I said last week on the show, that the newest statistics show that 350,000 people with PhDs and advanced degrees are on food stamps or working at supermarkets bagging people's groceries along with their students because they have no money. Who would ever thought that that would ever happen? But it's not only happening, it's no one's paying attention to it. Well, that's what happens when a whole society becomes indifferent to the needs of other people. Hold on there. Let's just say hello to John from New Jersey. We have a whole line of calls. I'm going to try to go through them as many as I can real quick, and we'll come back to Lynn Panessi. Hi, John.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
My call is about running and the effect it has on your knees. I've been a runner most of my life, and now I'm approaching 50, and I've got a lot of people telling me to stop doing it. It's a bad exercise that could have a damaging effect on your knees. And I've listened to your show, and I know you're very competitive with running. So I just wondered if there's something I could do to stop the negative effects that it may have on my knees.
Well, first, understand the basic principle of all. Running does not injure you at all. Running incorrectly will. The body mechanic will adapt if you understand how to keep the feet close to the ground within 2 inches when you're running and the knee slightly bent. That way you're not jamming the knee each time you hit, let's say, coming up down a hill. Normally, most injuries on the knees occur when you're running downhill or any form of incline. You almost have to visualize that as a snake, where a snake will go up and down, but always maintains the same point of gravity. We don't. When you go down a hill and you're running, your leg can go out 24 inches above the ground. So when you finally hit the ground with that leg, there's a lot of pressure per square inch behind it. That's going to be locked into the knee. So learn how to take shorter strides off the ball of the foot, and lean forward with the elbow up behind you. Almost visualize a glass of water on your elbow. That way you're running into a gravitational field, up or down, shorten your strides, and keep your feet close to the ground. That way there's no trauma on the knee. Then the nourishment for the knee is simple. You give it the antioxidants and the essential fatty acids. If there's any inflammation, glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin sulfate are both good and help with that, as does borage seed oil. So no reason to fear running as you get older. You know, I've trained people who are in their 80s and 90s who are running, not a problem, as long as they're doing it right. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Eric from New Jersey. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Thanks for everything you do. I just had a quick question. I bought a wonderful bunch of watercress from your Uptown Whole Foods, and I was wondering, since it has roots, could I plant it and maybe it'll grow, and how should I do that if it does?
You would be better off getting the seed starting from scratch, and there's several ways you can do it. You can do it hydroponically, where you simply have some running water and a recycled water. It prefers a cooler water over the root systems. That's why your best watercress, the best of the best, is always in streams and right at the side of a bank or in estuaries. But you can get a different type of watercress, one that is sweeter if you grow it hydroponically, and that way you can control it and its growth. That's how I would do it. All right?
Okay.
All the best to you. Mark from New Jersey. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Gary. I was listening to an interesting program on PRN this afternoon. They were interviewing this guy, David Bloom, from alcoholcanbeagas.com, and he said that the corn from biofuel has 45% starch that can't be digested by, from the cow, and that you can use that starch and ferment it into alcohol, and then you take that alcohol to run your car. I was wondering what you think about that.
That technically, that is correct. The trouble is, now think of how much nitrogen corn takes to grow. It is one of the most nitrogen-intense or fertilizer-intense crops we have. Also, you're promoting genetic engineering because corn, along with soy, are your two, number one and number two, and then cotton, number three, crops that are genetically engineered. They're also then taking genetically engineered crops and feeding that to cattle. The cattle now have a genetic engineering microorganism in them that has never been tested for long-term studies and safety ever. So that would be my very first concern. Then look at the amount of land that they're taking out of foods for humans, especially up in North Dakota, which is some of the best wheat in America. And they're putting it into corn for biofuels. If you simply use the land mass we have now for organic or sustainable agriculture instead of corn or beets or soy for biodiesel, we could feed the entire population and bring down the price of food. Those are the other things that have to be taken into that equation before you have a realistic answer. Okay?
Okay.
All the best. Thanks for calling. Virginia from Virginia.
Gary?
Hi.
Yeah, hi. I have recently discovered that I'm 23 and a half years into Lyme's disease, and I need to know what to do to get rid of it.
Maybe I missed what you said. Did you say that you have had Lyme's disease that you've just discovered?
23 and a half years.
23 and a half years. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Lyme's disease is very common because of ticks.
Yeah.
And it was first discovered in Old Lyme, that's L-Y-M-E, Connecticut, mm-hmm. back in 1975.
Uh-huh.
But now it's all over the place, and there's lots of people who have it, and it's in other countries as well. There's a tick-borne illness, and the bacteria that caused this, it is a spirochete, is called Borrelia. First and foremost, the most powerful treatment you could get, anyone could get, is an ozone therapy. Ozone, which is O3, helps to destabilize viruses of all types in the body and bacteria and parasites. But it does so in such a unique way that it doesn't hurt the healthy tissue in the process. Hence, I've been able to help people with HIV infections, with hepatitis B and hepatitis C and herpes 1, 2, and 6, including reversing them. And one of those people on the line is Lou Ampanessi, who can attest to this. But also intravenous vitamins. Those have to be designed, the vitamin drip, based upon the person's blood chemistry to see exactly what the level of viral activity is or what the damage has been to the various systems of the body. Because viruses can live in a symbiotic relationship with a person forever. And in effect, they're parasites. And most parasites, the role is not to kill the host, but rather to live through it. So you have to see what is the damage done to the liver, to the pancreas, to the thymus, to the spleen. What is the relationship of your bone marrow? Because everything in the body now involving the immune system has to work in a much higher level because every day it wakes up with the handicap of having a viral infection, and hence the symptoms. And this is for the other people who have not experienced Lyme or may have that in their future. They have to look first for any red circular lesion. It's a rash on the skin. And that erythema, migrans, or EM, that's the primary cause of the migration of the infecting organism outward through the skin. And it can happen from a few days to a few weeks after a bite. And then it gets to a larger circle. And the center appears to be clear. That's why they call it a bullseye rash. But I've seen people end up with excruciating achiness, and they can't sleep. They're fatigued. They have flu-like symptoms. They have muscle weakness and nausea. And it can happen any time from, let's say, 3 days to 3 weeks after a tick bite. That's when you get the bumps on the skin. That's the soonest a person can get the ozone, the better. Then the intravenous vitamin drips, that's also good. And then things such as coconut oil, a tablespoon of raw organic coconut oil each day. And that reduces inflammation and joint stiffness. And then pancreatin, which aids protein digestion and reduces inflammation. And then getting a bunch of pineapples and taking the core and blending that. You can't juice it because it's so pithy and there's so little actual water in it. But that's just loaded with bromelain, and that reduces inflammation. Primrose oil reduces inflammation, generally at 2,000 milligrams a day. Garlic does the same thing, and I would use all of them along with taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E. And I would also use dandelion, hawthorn, horsetail, or marshmallow root. Those all help your blood vessels. Echinacea is good, milk thistle, which can protect your liver, and red clover with wheatgrass juice. Every day I would put tinctures, 20 drops of red clover tincture, in with 2 ounces of wheatgrass juice and have that 4 times a day. I would also go towards a high alkaline diet, having as much raw as possible, and chlorophyll as much as possible. Lots of probiotics are important as well. Acupuncture is important. That also helps the system. And that's what I've been able to do and help people actually reverse their Lyme's disease. So can we reverse it? Yes. But you have to do the whole protocol. Hope that helps you, Virginia. Now let's say hello to, let's see who we have up here. Luann Panessi, you're back. You got a minute here, Luann.
Yes, I have. I'm sitting here reading more emails as we're going through this. Here's a very interesting one that you may or may not know about. This comes from Jessica, and I don't have a place where Jessica is writing from. And she said, 2 years ago, I started listening to you from the advice of a friend, and I'm hooked on your programs. She says, what she finds very interesting is that unlike most of the libertarian stations or the conservative stations, you don't attack other belief systems that, you don't exclude people or attack them like on many of the libertarian radio shows. And in fact, she says, she has a friend at NPR, and she says that your programs are the number one downloaded program of NPR, but that they don't want that information getting out to the public, which I find very interesting. So, you know, people send me emails like this. It's fascinating to get people's perspectives. And, hey, it's good to know.
All right. Well, I'll close with a simple insight. There was a philosopher named Arthur Kessler, and he said, nothing is more sad than the death of an illusion. When we listen to NPR, we're assuming that we're hearing the finest intellects covering the most important topics in the most objective way. Half of that is correct. We do have some very intellectual people, but they're not covering it objectively. They're covering it officially. They will not stray. They will not ask their guests the hard questions. There's a fear that if they open an area up, it could explore something that is not going to be happy with all their sponsors. And without their sponsors, they wouldn't exist. On the other end of that, you have people on non-commercial radio who do not have the large grants and subsidies of an NPR. And you will have them go after issues, but rarely are they well prepared or do a highly literate interview. So what we have historically have had is half of an issue dealt with and the other half not. And it's like someone saying, the future's going to be rough, you know, but we can work together. Platitudes don't change anything. And how many times can you go back and give us a platitude instead of actually changing something? And that's why I'm happy that we do have a large group of people today who are listening and coming for the very important provocative minds who are not afraid to ask the hard questions, but also do their homework and honor their audience. And so we are no longer limited. NPR, PBS, Pacifica, they all have strengths, but they have limitations. Their ideology is their limitation. There's nothing that is as repulsive to me as someone who is so certain that their ideology is right that they will bear no one else an opportunity to share their point of view. And if you're not just like them, from the same mold and cast as them, they'll throw you right out. And I find that's unfortunate. Because in our intemperance, in our disdain for that which could challenge us, all we're doing is holding on to our beliefs. And you have as many radicalized believers on the left as you do on the right, and neither have come up with the solutions we need. That's why I believe we must be open to anyone coming from an independent point of view who's willing to help people, but help everybody. What good is any answer if it only helps a restricted number of people? We need to help everyone. And that's what the left, the official corporate left and right, have failed to do miserably. And I think more and more people are seeing that, and more people are leaving the official left and right and leaving their CNN and leaving their stations. Because you look at the audience, I see the ratings for all, they're in the toilet. And yet looking for articles and documentaries, speakers, authorities, who are just there to tell them the truth. And that's the future. Luann, give people your phone number before they leave in case they want to reach out.
Sure. Well, they can email me at whnn@aol.com. That's William Harry Nancy Nancy, whnn@aol.com. Or they can call me at my home office, which is 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198.
Thank you. We're out of time. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. And by the way, not a single article, no interviews. I don't do interviews, nothing. And yet we're the fastest growing internet radio station in the world. Just one day this week, just one day, 227,000 pages read. You think there's some people interested in the more progressive points of view? I do. Millions upon millions. But they're under the radar and doing good work and making personal changes. Back in a moment, Michael Rupert. Please stay with us.